We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Oh my God. Entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Oh, let's go there.
Starts now.
What's up? It's Thursday. We're almost at the end, you guys.
God, can we
surviving.
Please. This is when I feel like time travel should be real. So we can just always time travel to the end of the week.
That's what you would use your time travel points
or
for?
Or maybe, first of all, why does time travel need points? This isn't an arcade. I don't need coins. I just feel
like, you know, a credit card.
It could be like, what's that Adam Sandler movie where he had the remotes and he can fast forward?
But didn't you see his life fell apart?
Okay, yeah, because he misused it. But if you used in the right moments, like he used it for like terrible things, like for sex and like to mute people.
Oh yeah, that's really bad.
That's the worst.
You don't think you would ever go back to like if a relationship fell apart and you'd be like, oh, what was that moment that it happened? You'd go back to
no,
fix it.
No, I would probably just go back to have sex again and then just go
back. If it was good.
Yeah, for sure.
Not
like
if it was bad and you're like, let's do
I don't know what bad sex is.
Okay. Well then, look at you, Mr.
Kick it off the show already.
I always say we always end up with the statement like, okay, time for therapy. Anyway, we have got a great show coming up.
We sure
we always
do,
say this,
honey.
But we really do. Of course, what's trending in the news top of the hour? We've got Hannah Hart from My Drunk Kitchen, also New York Times bestselling author, joining us.
Yeah, she will be over the phone.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
And we'll be drinking for her. Every time she says what, we'll drink.
Every time she says, I'm sorry for not showing up to the studio, we'll drink.
Okay, where's the bottle of tequila? And we are sassy today.
We are. Why not? Why not? It's the end of the week. I'm just going full on into it.
But you know what? If we're feeling that way, that means others are feeling that way, so we better represent. You know
and
what?
I also think it's the weather here in Los Angeles. It's very gloomy. It's the summer. It's the middle. It's the end of June. Where's the sun? All I'm saying. I'm kind of wanting it. I know I don't want to like. I don't really like to be hot, but at least I need some good weather.
You know what I did today?
What besides wear flip flops?
I wanted like fashion police over here. I was listening to the Greatest Showman soundtrack, the song Tightrope, and I started crying in my car. And I'm like, this song is really impacting me, like hitting my heart. I'm a romantic, or I need therapy.
There are just some things that you should keep to yourself.
You know what?
Like you are sitting in the car crying to the greatest show. Is there just other things happening in your world?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just feeling like
a bit emotional. Okay, that's cool. Feel your emotions.
But you're feeling sassy. I'm feeling emotional.
I don't even think I'm feeling sassy. This is just who I am.
Yeah, I know. Just like I'm a hippie. I swear, if someone calls me a hippie again, they're out.
You are a hippie.
I'm cutting you out.
There's just some things that you have to accept about your life, Shira, and being a hippie is one of them.
All right, let's get into what's trending in the news. Let's be professional here. Okay, so lawmakers in Congress have voted to defund Trump's transgender military ban. The House of Representatives voted in favor of an amendment to prevent the U.S. government from using federal money to fund the Trump administration's restrictive new policy that would effectively ban trans people from serving in the military. The vote was mostly split along party lines, with 9 Republicans voting for the amendment and 1 Democrat voting against it. Now, this is from Shannon Minter, the legal director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Military leaders don't want this ban, and the American people don't want this ban, including a growing percentage of the president's own party. Now, despite Trump's 2017 claims that trans soldiers are a financial burden, the Pentagon says that it has only spent approximately $8 million on transition-related health care since 2016, while the military's annual health care budget is more than $50 billion.
What? I just still don't really understand the financial situation in this. Like, where does the money come from? Like, where does $50 billion and all these things come from? I just don't understand. It feels like we, even though we're in a ton of debt, it just feels like we have this unlimited amount of money, like that cash flow that we can pull from at any time.
For the military.
Yeah, it's just weird.
And one of the arguments they made was how much money it was for this healthcare
for like
the trans community.
And it's but like clearly
eight,
not.
Yeah, $8 million over since 2016. So that, anyway.
And one of the false narratives that they like to kind of pull into this is like trans people are joining the military so the military can pay for their surgeries, and that is not how that works, and that's not what happens at all, because no one's going out there to go you know, actually be a part of the military and
do
then
that work.
Yeah, and then do the work, and then all of a sudden they can't do any work because they're going through the surgery, like, right. No, that's not happening.
Yeah, and by the way, people also join the military for other benefits too. They don't need to be in the trans community, right? Like,
right.
They get other whether it be health benefits or like a place to live or a supporter of their family, so there's always benefits to something.
It's just weird that they would be able, the idea that they're, you know, the military is okay with funding like things like Viagra or like things that help testosterone instead of helping like people that actually want to be there. It's just a very weird situation.
Well, now it seems from this that it's not going to be passed. So there you go. Let's move on to our next story. This is really scary. A Missouri man has been arrested after threatening to, quote, kill every gay person I can. Whoa. At Pride Fest in St. Louis. Edward Terry of Overland, Missouri, was charged on Tuesday with making a terrorist threat after he sent an email to one of Pride STL's parade planners saying he would come to Pride Fest with my guns to kill every gay person I can before I kill myself.
Whoa.
The manager of Pride STL contacted the FBI, and authorities tracked the email back to Terry through his cell phone. Terry told police he created the account using the name of a woman he once lived with. Now, St. Louis's Pride Fest is scheduled for June 29th and 30th, and Terry's bail has been set at $20,000 and is cash only.
See, this is what I'm talking about. This is why it's always, there's so much anxiety when going to these Pride festivals,
yeah.
Because you have to be careful and always watch your back. Just make sure you are always kind of have a clear plan of exit and just watch your surroundings, because it's important. And just because this was a threat and this guy is taken into custody, you don't know who, if he was planning something with someone else.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just, it's just something that just is very scary.
Definitely. Now, Joe Biden is not apologizing after Cory Booker and Kamala Harris are criticizing him for remarks about working with segregationists. But did Biden actually say anything wrong? That's the big question. All right. That's coming up on What's Trending in the News. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, so Biden is facing a lot of backlash over remarks he made at a Tuesday fundraiser about the late Senator James Eastland of Mississippi and Herman Talmadge of Georgia, two Democrats who were actually opposed to desegregation. The former vice president recalled the civility, though, of the Senate in the 70s and 80s at the fundraiser because of his experience working with Eastland and Talmadge. He says, I was in a caucus with James Eastland. He never called me a boy. He always called me son. He also said that this other guy, Talmadge, was one of the meanest guys I ever knew, but he was still able to work with him. At least there was some civility. We got things done. We didn't agree on much of anything. We got things done. We got it finished. But today, you look at the other side and you're the enemy. This is what Biden said. Not the opposition, the enemy. We don't talk to each other anymore. So he's referencing how two sides right now, and we all know there's a lot of separation and, you know, there's a lot of tension between the sides right now. And whereas in the past, at least even though there was tension, they were able to connect and move things along. And that's just not happening right now. So that's basically Biden's comments. Well, not a lot of people were happy about this because they thought basically he was siding with these guys. He was shining a light on them instead of, I guess, not... Like,
that's not exactly how I took it.
Well, by bringing them up and referencing them, and like it was almost like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker was saying that it's like, why would you even give them any sort of attention?
No, because he was saying in some ways he was talking about his time working with them, and it's offensive because of who these people are and their history in government. And a lot of times I feel like especially a lot of politicians and ones like Joe Biden, they like to kind of like tiptoe around major issues. And he has a lot of, I mean, there's a new poll that came out not too long ago, earlier this month, about, you know, Joe Biden actually has a huge amount of black, you know, voters voters mm-hmm. in demographically that are wanting to vote for him. And the fact that he can't condemn, you know, segregationists and that are willing, you know, to say, guess what? We don't even want that. We feel like black people are inferior. We feel like they shouldn't even be around us. We should feel like, one, they probably don't even like the idea of a Kamala Harris or a Cory Booker in office. It's not okay. And I understand, you know, some of Joe Biden's points, but I think at this point where we are culturally in our political climate, I don't want a presidential candidate that cannot call out terrible people.
Okay, so my take on it was that it wasn't like he wasn't calling them out. We all know that Joe Biden isn't a racist, okay? Like,
of course, and no one questioned that he was a racist.
What he was referencing is the fact that right now we have homophobic, racist, every other type that isn't supportive of the other on the other side. And that happened in the past, but at the very least, they were able to come together and have discussions. For me, that's what he was referencing. He wasn't trying to like shed a light on these people saying like, oh, I agree with them or I think they deserve attention. He was just saying there's always been, you know, people that don't want to bring the country together, but yet in the past we were able to come together. I felt he was referencing.
No, but honestly, because you have such a one. Biden comes from a legendary kind of state when it comes to him in politics. I mean, he was the vice president. He's done a lot of things in his role in politics. But when it comes from him being the vice president of the first African-American president, it is not okay to kind of go about in your campaign touting experiences of working with people that are considered segregationists.
But those
that are is not okay.
Part of history to move things forward. That's you still not, need to get them on
but
board.
But then you need to acknowledge that this is not okay. You need to acknowledge, guess what? I should not have bought, it was the wrong place and the wrong time to have bought this up. I do not believe he should have bought this up. I think it is a terrible idea. And I think Joe Biden, especially with a lot of the stuff that has kind of happened with the women kind of coming out about him and how he just reacts to things. He doesn't take a lot of things seriously. And his response
is... I think he's just being sincere and authentic and he's not... And I actually think they're using that to drag him right now.
No.
Where that wasn't what he was trying to do.
Have you ever... I mean, here's the thing. Have you ever had someone speak to you and something about the word boy, being called a boy... I've been called a boy by, you know, white teachers when I was living in the South. And that is the most disrespectful thing. Being called a boy is something that really dehumanizes people, especially African-American people. When you're not considered, it's basically saying you're not on the same level. And that is what people are saying. Like, these people that he is kind of touting his experience with working with them, it is just not okay. And there's you can talk about it in some ways, but you also have to acknowledge the other side of saying, guess what? I have a huge... like a lot of the people mm-hmm. that vote for me and they like me are African Americans. So me kind of, you know, shaking hands and saying, yeah, you have to work with people that are not always going to agree with you. But at this time and climate, Democrats are going to have to go another way. They are going to have to not fight dirty, but they're going to have to fight a little bit stronger than saying kumbaya. That is out of the waters. If they're doing that, 2020 sucks and we're not going to win.
So let's go to what Kamala Harris had to say about this, her reaction.
To coddle the reputations of segregationists, of people who, if they had their way, I would literally not be standing here as a member of the United States Senate, is, I think, it's just, it's misinformed and it's wrong. But, you know, let's be very clear that the senators that he is speaking of with such adoration are individuals who made and built their reputation on segregation. The Ku Klux Klan celebrated the election of one of them.
Yeah, once again, I don't think he was talking about them in adoration. He was just saying that, like, you referenced that there were horrible people there back then, and yet still they were able to find some, you know, connection.
I just think some people are not going to understand because they haven't experienced that.
So then let's go to Cory Booker's response.
Cory Booker actually had a beautiful response to it that I feel like really showed respect in a way and really explained the situation.
The president said, I should know better, and this is what I know. As a black man in America, I know the deeply harmful and hurtful usage of the word boy and how it was used to dehumanize and degrade. I know that segregationists like the two people you were talking about, through their laws and their language, deeply wounded this nation, and the present day manifestations of their work can still be seen in black and brown communities like the one I go home to. I know that somebody running for president of the United States, somebody running to be the leader of our party, should know that using the word boy in the way he did can cause hurt and pain. And we need a presidential nominee and the leader of our party to be sensitive to that. And the last thing I know is I know that I was raised to speak truth to power, and that I will never apologize for doing that. And Vice President Biden shouldn't need this lesson. And
okay, so Biden responded to all of this. He was actually asked by reporters outside a fundraiser in Maryland whether he should apologize, and he asked to apologize for what? Here's what he had to say.
They know better.
Are you going to apologize? Like Cory Booker
apologize
has called for
what?
Cory Booker's called for it. He's asking you to apologize.
He knows better. There's not a racist bone in my body. I've been involved in civil rights my whole career. Period. Period. Period.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
So, see, the way he speaks is so gross.
I felt like he could have just been like, this is taken. Like,
he's going to say Cory needs to apologize. He knows better.
This is getting dirty. I think what I feel, this is getting very
dirty.
I'm
sorry. That is a way a lot of, like, especially older white men feel like they can speak to other people, and it's just not okay. And it's unfortunate. That's the reason why I feel like Biden has walked into this, because he is leading this charge of everyone feeling like Biden is a front runner, and he's feeling himself. He's a little cocky and feels like he doesn't have to play the same game. Like, dude, that presidential seat is not yours yet.
Oh, of
course. Need to understand that your people that you want to vote for you can flip in a second if they see that you don't care kind of about, you know, real issues and real concerns that people have. Then you're selling your 2020 campaign, you know, adieu. It's not happening, honey. Sorry.
Well, that was what's trending in the news. What a discussion we just had. We're moving into the top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
All right, so coming up in 9 minutes, Good Place star and body positivity activist Jamila Jamil is calling out one pregnant celebrity. Honey, that story is crazy. And then obviously celebrities are rushing to Bella Thorne's defense after that super intense IG video. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio.com. Don't you go anywhere.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, so we are back getting into What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. Mm-hmm. Now, I love talking about this queen, Jamila Jamil. Yep. She is from The Good Place, one of my favorite shows, and she is like a very strong activist. I mean, body positivity, I mean, social justice, all the things. She has no problem with using her voice. Well, she's always been a little bit vocal when it comes to calling out celebrities who promote like weight loss products on social media. I mean, from the Cardi B to the Kardashians and Iggy Azalea, who was actually in the studio, well, in this area today.
Yeah,
she was
at the station. Yeah.
Well, now she has her eyes set on Amber Rose.
Uh-oh.
Who recently promoted a product in a paid partnership with Flat Tummy Tea. Now, in the caption, Amber, who's currently pregnant, claimed that the product was to help us moms with those bloated, nauseous, blah-feeling days. She also alleged that the product is safe to take while pregnant or breastfeeding.
Wow.
But Jamila was like, wait a second, pause. Posting a screenshot of the picture on Twitter, she literally seemed astonished, like I was, honestly, when she posted it, at the fact that these new products were intended for pregnant women, especially considering they're not FDA approved. So she tweeted this. She said, Flat Tummy Tea products for pregnant women? Is this FDA approved? Are we effing kidding? And then she tags FDA. And then she continues to say, so many women with such big platforms promoting such irresponsible stuff that it blows my mind. So Amber's Instagram comments were also far from positive, with everyone really saying, how dare you promote this crap and you're literally pregnant. It's kind of ridiculous. Appearing to, you know, to respond to the criticism, Amber later edited her Instagram caption and explained that the product wasn't a detox tea, adding, haters, stop riding the bandwagon and think for yourselves. What is happening here? Like, I've always seen those flat tummy tea things. If you're not familiar with those, it's like literally a detox tea where people say that you can take them and lose weight. It's like super quickly.
It's like what it's called, flat tummy.
But Amber is pregnant. She's not going to get a flat tummy.
I think it's
not
impossible.
In this 9 months. I don't understand.
I mean, I do think, considering it's not FDA approved, it's completely irresponsible. And it's like, is it really worth the amount of money? I mean, listen, we all got to get our coin, as you would say.
And she's pregnant,
so she has kids. She needs to make some money.
But
she's hustling.
Amber Rose is loaded.
You know, that's not fair to say that. That's not fair.
She has a lot of money. And we've had people that work close with her, that we are friends with, that has said that she has done very well for herself.
She obviously thought it would be okay, and she did it. But once again, it goes back to, you got to have a filter for these things. And sometimes it's just not worth it. I don't care how much money it is. Have some integrity.
I mean, that's honestly shocking, especially if it's not FDA approved and if she's actually taking this flat tummy stuff. Like, I would go see a doctor immediately to check if your baby's okay. And I'm judging. I for sure am.
It's probably some sort of tea that just slap on the flat tummy stuff. Because most tea is just good for you and I guess would help with bloating and all that because it's just water that runs through you.
I don't know, but I find it very irresponsible. But we're going to switch gears here because we got a lot more coming up. And what's the tea, honey? Now, we talked yesterday about that whole Bella Thorne thing and we played that very dramatic clip of her crying over her nudes being leaked, and Whoopi Goldberg had something to say about it. Well, more celebrities are actually kind of speaking out, and they are kind of supporting Bella. Kind of shocked. Well, we'll get into those responses in 7 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, so if you missed yesterday's show, Shira and I had a heated discussion over this Bella Thorne, Whoopi Goldberg situation, honey. Now, to give a little backstory, Bella Thorne really was upset with some words that Whoopi Goldberg had over her decision to tweet out her own nude photos before an alleged hacker could. And Bella got very emotional in this video, and I wanted to play a little clip of it. Oh, our Vox Pro. We're having some tech difficulty. But just imagine. Here, I can give you an interpretation.
Oh, yeah, this is great.
You ready?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. I just cannot believe that would be how, like, you are just a mean old lady. And I cannot believe that you would think that I shouldn't be able to take nude photos. I just can't do it. Well, I can't do it, Whoopi. And I'm going to cancel my interview with The View because I don't want those views on me or future children. So there you go.
Wow, and the Oscar goes to.
You're welcome. So that is just basically what she said. And it was actually really, you know, she was actually very emotional and clearly triggered by the entire situation and, you know, not making fun of it, but kind of making fun of it. But stars are really rallying around her following all of this. And Goldberg said on Monday's episode, actually, that celebrities should know better than to take naked photos of themselves. And Bella obviously posted that video where she was sobbing and kind of aimed everything at the talk show host.
Yeah.
Well, Zendaya actually called. She and Bella put this on Instagram. She said, "Zendaya called me today to make sure I was okay. We talked a lot about this generation, the one before us as well, and how as women we shouldn't feel bad about ourselves or our bodies." And she continued to say, "Slut shaming is one of the biggest topics of this generation, but yet we still keep going somehow. It's really sad. It's really, really sad." The View. Thorne also Instagrammed a series of supportive exchanges from her friends, including Lucy Hale, Madison Beer, and Lily Rose Depp, and commented, "When your friends come out of the woodworks to support you, is all you need to be brave." Lucy Hale said, "Good for you, baby girl. I'm so proud of you for speaking up. This breaks my heart, but you're making a difference for other girls and women." Meanwhile, Paris Hilton, she even kind of reached out, you know, who's obviously very infamous for her 2004 sex tape when that was leaked, commented on Thorne's post with a heart-eyed emoji. And I guess there's a lot of things that obviously celebrities are seeing this, and I think now everyone is kind of so afraid to, like, either really speak their minds.
Well, specifically
and so
jump women, I would say.
The bandwagon
women.
At some points. And so I still think, in all honesty, that I feel like I'm on the side of Whoopi. I don't think Whoopi was slut shaming her. I think that was completely a completely disingenuous take. But I don't know. I it's just very interesting. A lot of people are kind of agreeing with you, Shear, from yesterday.
Thank God. I just want to be agreed with, people to, you know, say that I have the right response to things. No.
Do you think this is actually, though, all of this happening, do you actually feel like there's actually a conversation around slut shaming that is happening and going in a positive way?
Yeah, I think this conversation needs to happen. I think that already Bella is that type to stir the pot around this conversation. She's very open about her sexuality, her body. She kind of took, you know, coming out of Disney, she took a sharp turn to say, like, I'm not just this Disney girl anymore.
Right.
And I'm going to be who I am very openly. And so I do think when this conversation came up, like, one, the fact that these leaks happened and she had to release them, that whole experience was very triggering.
Oh, for sure.
And what she even describes as, like, it feels like you're raped in a way. Mm. And then for The View, which has a huge platform, and the fact that they're older women to take on the subject matter and kind of not side with her in a way, even though the other women did. Like, there were other women at that table.
Yeah, I mean, Megan Megan McCain.
Like, she shouldn't have been surprised that there was going to be one person at that table that's, like, going to bring up this this opinion, because it is a valid opinion.
It's most definitely a valid opinion. I think it just makes sense. I think we have gotten so used to, obviously, I love how the world is changing, we're evolving, but there is still some things that I feel like I'm going to take from the last generation, from my mother's generation, who took something from her, like, her mom's generation, that is just, like, I don't know, common sense. I'm always going to take, I'm always going to have that in the back of my head.
You're not going to take, like, recipes.
No, I'm going to take the common sense stuff where they're actually telling me, be careful what you're putting on the internet, because you can lose your job. You can lose, you know, opportunities. You can just be careful, be aware. It's an awareness that I feel like is missing from this generation, where they're just expecting you to, you just have the right to, you know, to do this. And I don't know.
Well, that's what freedom of speech is. I think we're dealing with a time of this idea of experimenting with radical honesty and really being who you are, because that can possibly take you to the next level of your life and kind of allow you freedom and actually more success than if you censored that.
Yeah.
And so, including as an artist, if you live in the censored space, then are you really an artist? Are you really going to find success? And so I think that's where when you play with that, it can actually get very dangerous. If you're constantly living in this mode where you're living in fear, then it actually can stifle you from growing.
But I don't think awareness should not be matched up with fear. I think having a sense of an awareness is not saying you're living your life in fear.
We didn't say Bella wasn't aware, but she's like, I'm not going to, like, change my life just because these things are out there right now, because guess what? We're going to probably get more into a place where we're out there and being watched and all that. And if we keep moving and changing our life, then that means we accept it, and then that other side can continue to push us into a place where there's no boundaries.
We've already had this discussion. If you want to check it out, and if you missed it, head over to where, because we do have a podcast, Let's Go There, with Shira and Ryan. So head over to wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple Podcasts, or go to our website at wearechannelq.com radio.com.
It's about taking your power back. Okay, that's all I have to say about it.
Anyway, it's over,
Shira. What's trending in the news, top of the hour, coming up, including, oh my God, I'm so excited about this, a new Freddie Mercury track. It's coming up in 9 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, here's what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour, Kamala Harris is introducing a bill to guarantee insurance coverage of drugs used in pre-exposure prophylaxis, a strategy to prevent transmission of HIV. So Harris's PrEP Access and Coverage Act, if it becomes a law, will guarantee insurance coverage for PrEP and create a grant program to fund uninsured patients to access to it. So the bill will require all public and private health insurance plans, including Medicare and Medicaid, to cover drugs used for PrEP without a copay, just as the Affordable Care Act requires insurance to cover contraception. It will also fund a grant program to assist states, territories, tribal communities in facilitating access to PrEP for people who lack insurance, and prohibit companies selling life insurance, disability insurance, and long-term care insurance from denying that coverage to customers who take PrEP, or charging them higher premiums. Now, this could be, as you can imagine, a game changer. She also wants to fund a public education campaign to reduce disparities in access to and use of PrEP by educating the public. So she's really stepping up for the community there.
I love that.
Now, New York legislators approved a ban on the use of the gay panic and transgender panic defenses in murder cases yesterday. The gay panic defense is basically when a defendant justifies violence by claiming that finding out a victim's sexuality or gender identity caused them to suffer from temporary insanity. I didn't even know this was a thing, but it's pretty fascinating that it had been around and legal to do that. Gay Democrats Daniel J. O'Donnell, member of New York State Assembly, and Brad Hoylman, state senator, introduced the bill to ban the defense last weekend. Hoylman told the New York Times, "I'm glad that New York is sending a message to prosecutors, to defense attorneys, juries, and judges that a victim's LGBTQ identity can't be weaponized. I don't think we can leave it to judges and juries, given the record of homophobia that we've seen in courtrooms. We're acting prudently to codify values of tolerance and acceptance of LGBTQ people."
So this was a way for people to get away with the hate crimes. This
Pretty
was a
much.
Way for people to get away with transphobia.
Yep.
It was a way for people to say, "I was so scared of this person that I killed them or I hurt them." And it was just, it's disgusting. There's no panic of, what panic do you have of knowing that someone is gay? Like, that is very alarming, and it just literally fueled murderers.
Right? You use this as an excuse.
Yeah.
It's wild. So we're happy that that's being passed. And actually, New York is the sixth U.S. state to ban the gay panic and transgender panic defenses.
But it's still in so many other places.
Yep.
It's like sad.
Yep. Now, this is exciting. This is a fun piece of news. If you're a Freddie Mercury or Queen fan, a previously unreleased Freddie Mercury song recorded in 1986 has been discovered after a 10-year search by Dave Clark, one of Mercury's closest friends and former member of rock and roll band the Dave Clark Five. The song "Time Waits for No One" was originally part of the 1986 West End musical "Time." The version released on the musical's official soundtrack was accompanied by layers of backing vocals. But this new stripped back song features Mercury's voice alone alongside a piano. It is beautiful. Let's play a clip.
"I wait for nobody. Time waits for nobody. We all must plan our hopes together, or we'll have no more future at all. Waits for nobody. We might as well be deaf and dumb and blind. I know that sound."
Yes, Freddie Mercury, sing it, baby. I love him.
Did someone's mom just relive their childhood again in the studio?
I love him. So that was 5 years before his death from AIDS. That was recorded. You know, he was in the height of his fame. And it's a beautiful track. I love it. "Time Waits for No One." Oh, touches my heart.
It was cute.
So that
it was beautiful.
What's trending in the news top of the hour.
That's all I have to
say. Are you
making
fun of me?
No, it was beautiful.
It was. Okay, well, coming up next, we've got the amazing Hannah Hart joining us. Entertainer, comedian, food enthusiast, New York Times bestselling author. You might know her from her series on YouTube social media called My Drunk Kitchen. Well, she will be joining us to talk about her new book, which includes a pride recipe.
I mean, that's going to be interesting. I hope her phone connection's good.
Yes, it will be. Let's hope for the best. All right, that's coming up right here on Let's Go There on the new Channel Q. Don't go anywhere.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, so we are so excited today to welcome our next guest. She's an entertainer, comedian, food enthusiast, New York Times bestselling author from My Drunk Kitchen, Hannah Hart. Welcome
Hello.
To the show.
Hi.
What's up, girl?
Hi. So much is up, a fellow girl. I'm just
fellow
so happy.
Lady.
I didn't know you were the one hosting this show.
I know.
I'm so happy to talk
Isn't
to
that
you.
Crazy? Yeah, a lot of people, like, I've known over the years through YouTube and social media, they'll come here and be like, "What? You?" Yes, it's me.
Yeah.
I get around. So,
and also, nice to meet you, Ryan. Not to give you, you know, I want to give you attention, too.
There you go.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate
it. He gets too much attention.
I get tons, so thanks.
Oh, do you really?
I let Shira have her moment every once in a while.
Oh, that's so kind.
Yeah,
that's so kind.
You know,
it's
really
a giving
nice.
Soul.
Yeah, I'm like Mother Teresa for gay people.
So, Hannah, you've been very busy. You have a new book out. What number book is this? I feel like you've had multiple books out.
Oh, my God. You know what? This is book number three. This is book number three and
what?
Cookbook number two. Yeah.
You're like an official auteur.
I know. I am just so special and so fancy. It overwhelms me every day. I can't even believe it.
Well, the book is called My Drunk Kitchen Holidays, How to Savor and Celebrate the Year, a cookbook.
Yes, ma'am.
And you actually have a pride recipe. So let's talk about the cookbook, what people can expect, and about this pride-themed recipe.
Well, you know, the cookbook is kind of, you know, as I come into being my adult self and kind of going through your 20s and coming into your 30s, I find myself making a lot of new traditions. You know, I didn't grow up in a queer family, but I'm going to have a queer family. I'm engaged. We're going to get married. We're going to have kids. We're going to do the whole shebang. So right now it's kind of like we're building our own culture and our own traditions. And that's really what My Drunk Kitchen, How to Savor and Celebrate the Year is all about. It's all about embracing your adult life and the traditions from your family you want to carry with you and the traditions for your new family that you want to start. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think it's beautiful because, yeah, I've known you since you came to LA and you had this viral YouTube channel and then it's evolved and then you got like TV shows, books, all this stuff. And now you're moving on to the next stage of your life, it seems.
Yeah, truly. You know, and I think that for a lot of queer people, we don't have any examples of that experience. Hmm. You know, we don't. It's not like I'm coming from my house of a gay family and, you know, my family was straight. And like, I think that for a lot of people, when the holidays come around, it can be pretty triggering, not just for queer people, but for a lot of people who don't necessarily fall into like the cookie cutter side of life. I happen to know that holidays are a really difficult time of year for me. And I have always spent like in the past being like, damn it, the holidays are coming up. I wish I was excited so I could do something for my channel, or I wish I wanted to do some fun holiday thing. And it never came easily. So with this My Drunk Kitchen Holidays cookbook, I decided to tell myself instead of turning away from that feeling, to look back and face it and say, look, I can make my own traditions. What are the things that matter to us? Maybe we want to do Friendsgiving more than Thanksgiving, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking to the one and only Hannah Hart, entertainer, comedian, food enthusiast, and New York Times bestselling author of her new cookbook, My Drunk Kitchen Holidays, How to Savor and Celebrate the Year. And she has an amazing pride recipe, which we're going to get to soon. But I kind of want to switch gears because I am such a fan of one, like the Holy Trinity, you, Mamrie, and Grace Helbig. I just love you guys so much. And I love the work that you've done from like Camp Dakota to Dirty 30. I was wondering, do you still see yourself kind of going into the realm of like film and doing more, you know, acting?
Oh, hell yes, baby. You want to just tell somebody to give us the money to make another movie? We will be there.
I mean, seriously, I think they need to because one amazing thing, especially when it comes into the storytelling of you guys, it's all in like indie. It's just you guys creating what you want to create and tell the stories that you want to like tell. But is there a story that you still feel like you haven't gotten to explore?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really want to make a romantic comedy. You know, I'm all about like positivity and growth and humor and love and chaos and all those wonderful, fun things that blend together to make just like a great rom-com. And so I've been trying to make this rom-com for a couple of years now. And that's just Hollywood, baby. You know, you get a lot of heat, the heat backs off, and you just keep going. I always say, it's not about striking while the iron is hot. Mm. It's about making the iron hot by continually striking.
Oh,
that's a good point of view.
I like that.
And I guess because there's so much conversation in Hollywood about queer representation, and I feel like we're seeing that kind of slowly. But what do you think that it's happening fast enough? Do you feel like it is there's stories that are being told that, you know, represent kind of everyone, or is there still things missing?
Well, the glory of humanity is that there's no story being told that can represent everyone, mm-hmm. right? Because we all come from such different experiences. But there are ways to tell stories which allow others into your experience. And fortunately, I have been able to publish books and I've been able to create my own online content and tell my stories. So I feel like, hey, you know, I feel pretty good. But I do think that there is so much more that we as a society can do by way of storytelling and by way of exploring all the wonderful mix of cultures and people and representation that we have in America.
Yeah.
So, I think we've got a long way to go.
Yeah, definitely. My Drunk Kitchen's Hannah Hart is joining us right now. You also have the podcast Hannah Lies. So
great name,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, which you launched in 2018. It's really looks at self-help, mental health, and of course tackles it in your way, which always includes some humor. And now you could say zen. Like, I love your attitude. And were you always this way? I mean, you've gone through a lot and you've had a lot of obstacles.
Sure. How many times have we interviewed each other? You know me.
But I feel like I feel like you've always been positive. This girl's been through a lot. She had a pretty, you know, difficult childhood and always stepped it up to even like support her entire family. And so I guess like moving into adulthood, you've really found this nice balance also with the content you're making.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy because our podcast is called Hannah Lies. This, it is the self-help podcast that just can't help itself. And it takes kind of a frank look at the tedious nature of maintaining your mental health. You know, mental illness is a real misnomer because an illness implies that it is something to be cured. Mm. But it is not something to be cured. It is a companion with you for the rest of your life, you know. And so Hannah Lies This is really just out there to have like a pretty frank but also pretty positive look at the efforts you make in the mental health space. And we interview like a wide range of people. We had the CEO of Patreon on the other day. I was talking about workplace conflict and resolution. Oh man, it's a killer podcast, bro. You got to check it out.
Yeah, I need to catch up on all my podcasts. I feel like all I do is audio. We have a 3-hour show and then I'm like, but no, I actually think it's interesting. How do you not approach all these like self-help things and personal growth without being snobby? Because I was actually recently called out on a personal level with someone I was dealing with. And he was like, you know, there's a way to do it where you don't need to be judgy. Like, so how do you...
Or preachy.
Preachy. So how do you approach
or
that?
Preachy.
Yeah, how do you do that? What's your take on that?
I mean, like, I guess that the reality is that the more you realize that your life is your one experience and there's no universal truth. And like when you're talking to someone about an epiphany that's really worked for you, just stay there. Stay in the knowledge that this is you and your story and your epiphany. And don't take away from listening to another's. Does that make sense? It's like one of my favorite quotes is, you have two ears and one mouth so that you listen twice as much as you speak.
Mm. Yeah. No, I'm hearing.
You know?
Listening. Mm. Yeah. No, I think that's amazing because it is hard in this day and age where we all have platforms publicly, but then also like we learn a lot and we want to share it with the people around us.
Yeah. No, and that's a happy, healthy desire. But, you know, read a room.
Look at that. Learning new things. So, but you are so busy also with Pride Month, I assume. What are you up to?
Well, Pride Month is coming to a close pretty much, right? It's the 20th. I'm going to New York next week. We were traveling all day today. I'm having a good time. I mean, to be honest, I haven't really celebrated that Pride that much as an out person. And so the last 2 years are the first times I ever celebrated Pride, I write a lot about Pride actually in the new book because, I've had such a complicated relationship with it, even after coming out. I think by this time next year, I'll be like, this is what we do for Pride. We eat these delicious things. You know what I mean? We do these things, but right now, our focus is mainly like, we're going to have a happy, healthy, stable relationship, you know?
Oh, yeah. With your fiance.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. I mean, I'm assuming you already had that because you ended up becoming together fiances. Because you need to have a stable relationship.
I mean, you never know what's going on with people, man. Like, you never know. Especially, like, you never know. You don't know. Like,
no, totally.
But I will say that, like, again, like, as the first out queer people in our family, there is a lot of stuff that gets brought up every year, especially after getting engaged. And it's interesting because people ask me, you know, oh, well, what do you always cook for this? Or what do you always do for that? And I'm literally in the process of building my family right now. And I always just want to be like, I'll get back to you. Right now, we go to couples therapy. That's the best thing we do. You know, like,
you are so functional. You are like stable, functional, and very healthy. I appreciate these things you're sharing because this is real. You see the Instagrams, you see that, but like, I love the honesty.
Oh, yeah. Well, good, because I am bad at lying. So there you go.
Me too, which is why I'm constantly awkward and overshare. So Hannah Hart, thank you so much again for joining us again. Her new book, My Drunk Kitchen Holidays, How to Savor and Celebrate the Year, a cookbook, is out. And anything else you want to promote, you got your podcast, Hanalyze This.
Well, technically, the book is available for pre-order now. If you go to mydrunkkitchenholidays.com, it'll be coming out this fall, just in time for the holidays.
I love it. I think it's so cool.
Love it.
And best of luck. I love chatting with you. Hope to see you in person soon. And congrats on your engagement and continued success with your beautiful relationship.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ray. You know, Channel Q. Good job with everybody. Ryan, pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, hope to have you on again soon. Bye.
Bye.
All right, that was Hannah Hart.
She is full of positivity.
And she is so smart and well-spoken.
Yeah,
she's always like, I'm always blown away.
I know,
okay.
You're very attracted to her.
I'm attracted to her mind. All right, after this, speaking of which, are you a people pleaser? Coming up after this, we're revealing what happened in your past that might be making you one and what to do to stop doing it. It's our Let's Go There topic of the day.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, for our Let's Go There topic of the day, we're talking about people pleasing. Specifically, an article came out that talked about where people pleasing might stem from. And actually, it could be a result of trauma in your life. And there's a new saying for it. It's called fawning. And they also talk about how to recognize it and what to do if you find out that you are indeed a people pleaser. So we're going to get into that right now. And we've actually got someone here to help us with that. Speaker, author, biologist, Rebecca Heiss. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Oh, of course, Rebecca. Now, this idea of like people pleasing is one that I feel like is always really relevant when it comes to like friendships or just
relationships.
And just relationships in general. Work. But I'm wondering, you know, I wanted to know your thoughts on this idea that it can come from like trauma.
Yeah, well, a couple things on that. I mean, first of all, the whole reason that we feel the need to please people is, you know, we evolved as a social creature, you know, so we're meant to be in groups. And if you think about sort of our ancestral groups, there's 20 or so individuals in that group. So we have to be really careful because we get kicked out of that group. We die, right? Now look at the world today. We've got 8 billion of us. So if you get kicked out of one group, it's not that hard to find the next one. So I think people pleasing has sort of evolved in us to be a survival tactic. Mm. And I think what's happening, right, in these traumatic events is people pleasing is often a strategy for survival. It's finding the community, finding the group, trying to stay safe and appease. So often what happens, in a sexual assault, for example, a lot of females, 70% in fact, don't have the typical fight or flight response. They freeze. They appease. They try and sometimes even befriend their assailant because it's a natural defense to say, oh my gosh, please don't hurt me. Everything's okay. They smile. Mm-hmm. And that is a physiological response as opposed to, you know, punching the dude or screaming or anything else that we suggest that these people in these situations, the traumatic situations, might do. Their bodies respond very differently. And again, probably from a survival standpoint.
Yeah, and trauma could also be, and it talks about this in this article, that you might have grown up in a very controlling, chaotic environment and internalized the idea that if you're perfectly good or well-behaved, that you could minimize conflict and secure love and attachment. So it was interesting because even, you know, looking at our childhoods, Ryan and I, like, you know, he come from a single...
Can I talk about my own experience? Talk about your experience.
I can't.
I don't know why you felt responsible to do that.
I was just like talking about us. And
that was weird.
Yes. So I mean, like my parents were divorced. And so I felt, I think that they had a lot of stuff going on and I just wanted to make them happy and not be the thing that was disruptive in their life. And so I ended up maybe going out of my way to be like, not like the perfect child, but to like be the person that wasn't going to be the disruptor. Because
the disruptor, sure.
Yeah, exactly. And then as it continues in life, you bring that to your other dynamics.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we especially we put stories on people, right? So we're taught from an early age, especially young females are taught to be people pleasers, to be nice and be kind and don't be the person that causes a scene and all of this. And so this is sort of culturally webbed in to so much of what we do.
Yeah, it is. Well, also, it says that in this article, which you didn't write, but it's what has inspired us for this, that
people... Man, I need this article.
I know. It's amazing. It's on letsqueerthingsup.com. We're going to post it on our...
wearechannelq.com.
We'll reference it. So it talks about how people pleasers are sort of emotional chameleons. Let's go back and say, how does one know if they're a people pleaser?
Good question. I think it's... A lot of it is self-awareness, right? So... If you find yourself needing the approval of others to be happy, that is not a healthy space to be in. And ironically, it's usually driven by our own needs to be accepted. So if you can listen to that inner voice, right? Just be loved. You got to start with loving yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you don't absolutely love who you are, and you're comfortable with that person, you're going to keep shifting and shape-shifting and trying new things to get the love and attention that you need from others. And that's a really unhealthy space to be in.
Yeah. Rebecca Heiss again joins us, speaker, author, biologist. Do you think if you're a people pleaser, that could lead to codependencies in relationships?
That could lead to what?
Codependency, like being a codependent in a relationship.
Oh, a codependent, absolutely. Because codependents feed off of one another, right? So if I need the attention and love of one person, they need the attention and love of me, it is a really toxic relationship.
Interesting. Okay. Well, now that we've discussed how messed up we all are, we're going to talk about after the break how to break free from people pleasing. So that's coming up next on Let's Go There with Chira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. We are back and we're talking about people pleasing and how now they're calling people pleasing fawning. Experts are saying it can be possibly caused by trauma. Now joining us to talk more about this, Rebecca Heiss, speaker, author, biologist. Now, before the break, we were talking about people pleasing as it relates to relationships and friendships. Let's talk about what happens at work with people pleasing and how you might be people pleasing at work.
Yeah, it's a really easy pattern to slip into and one that you want to be really self-aware of because it's super easy for you to get taken advantage of, right? If you are saying yes all the time, check yourself. It's really important that you set some healthy boundaries because if you're the yes person, guess what? You're going to end up constantly saying yes to things that are maybe not in your wheelhouse, and then you're going to perform worse on everything. That's going to hurt your relationships with people. It's going to hurt your relationships with other coworkers, with your family, and it's pretty detrimental all around.
So how do you create boundaries, though? So if you're already kind of that yes person, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, people are already stepping on my boundaries, and then you change, and then I feel like that can be interpreted as like you're a negative person, or now all of a sudden there's something wrong with you. How do you establish those boundaries? Because I feel like that can be very skewed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a couple conversations to be had there. One, you have to be comfortable enough with your own story because the only story that you get to control is your own. Mm-hmm. So if you decide that, oh, other people are going to say this about me and I can't let other people say it, that's a people-pleasing pattern right there because you're already deciding what other people are going to say about you before you break the habit. Instead of saying, you know what, let me be clear about my communication. Here's why I'm going to do this. I'm going to start saying no to some things that I'm not super excited about or are not completely in my wheelhouse. And here's my reasons why. And when you create that space for people to say, oh, I understand why she's changing or why he's going to be doing this more, it creates a new narrative for not only you, but for the relationships that you're building with your coworkers.
Yeah, it talks about people pleasing is out of fear. So I guess that's really interesting. That like, what are you in fear of?
Rejection. Mm-hmm. It is probably the biggest human fear, right? Rejection is super dangerous. Again, thinking about sort of the ancestral brains that we have, if your social group rejects you, you're dead. And so this dumb Stone Age brain that we're walking around with still thinks that if we are rejected, it is absolutely spelling death for us, when in reality, you know, you get rejected by a peer group, there's another peer group for you. You know, you can actually create new peer groups because there's 8 billion of us on the planet. And for the most part, we're not starving to death on the savannah, you know? So, yeah. So this whole like survival brain that thinks it's going to die, we need to sort of update it and challenge it to sit with that discomfort for a little bit, you know, sit in that discomfort, feel that when you say no to a person and you're creating the discomfort for them, because that's the big challenge, right? People think,
yes.
Oh, I'm going to make them uncomfortable.
Talk about that. Yes.
Right? You're going to make them uncomfortable. Good. Make them uncomfortable. That's okay. That's part of their story, and you don't get to control their story. Mm. You can only control your own story.
So we talked about saying no. What, how else can you break free from people-pleasing?
I think, honestly, the first part is going to be a self-awareness piece. Setting those healthy boundaries. But then the other piece is mediating the fear. And a lot of that is actually mapping out what's the worst thing that could happen. Because your brain thinks, I'm going to die, right? It's very black and white, your brain. It thinks I'm comfortable, I'm happy, I'm pleasing people, or I'm in a state of discomfort. And to your brain, that means death, right? So mediating the fear and saying, what's the worst case scenario? Okay, it's not death, more than likely. And then flipping that on the head and saying, but what's the best thing that could come of this? If I say no to this opportunity or to this person, what's the best thing that happens? And when you start focusing on some of those positive things that you can change by saying no to people, you might realize, oh, I'm going to have more time to do this, or I'm going to be able to increase my relationship here or spend more time doing that. And suddenly, it's not such a scary thing. It's a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, it also, there's also this idea of you feel uncomfortable if someone is angry at you and you act like people around you, which we talked about that, and you need praise to feel good. So how can we reverse that?
Yes, honey, please talk about that too, because that is a huge thing.
Okay, wait. So how how are we reversing the need to have people love us?
Yeah, feeling praised to feel good and also feeling uncomfortable if someone is angry at you.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, can I elaborate on that? I think a lot of times if someone is used to how a person kind of is all the time, and especially I love this article. It quotes it kind of being an emotional chameleon in some ways, where you can really just form into whatever group you are. And then if you, that person that is known as that emotional chameleon, has a day where they're not what everyone is expecting, it's kind of like now you have to make sure everyone else is okay around you, because it's like you're not caring about yourself in some ways.
Well, absolutely, because you're not being authentic to who you are. If you're constantly trying to be that chameleon to fit in, you're not genuinely authentic. And that to me, you have to be willing and comfortable to be who you are. And that might change from place to place and scenario to scenario. But at the core, who you are, how you interact with others, that doesn't change. So there's a lot of self-love in practicing that to be comfortable with who you are in any given situation. Because if you're going in and you're expecting everyone to love you, guess what? They're not. If everyone loves you, you're telling different stories to different people. And that is not a healthy practice. So there's going to be people that don't like you. And guess what? That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Love it. Well,
it means you stood for something at some point.
It's like you'd rather be an acquired taste than everybody's taste.
Oh,
there you go. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, a lot of good bumper stickers here today. All right, Rebecca Heiss, thank you so much again for joining us. As usual, Rebecca is a speaker, author, biologist. Where can people find you?
Absolutely, my pleasure. Come by my website. That's the easiest place to find me, Rebecca Heiss, HEISS.com, or you can find me on any of the socials, Dr. Rebecca Heiss. Looking forward to talking with you guys again. I'll have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Love it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got what's trending in the news, top of the hour, and our question of the day. Have your friends ghosted you after becoming parents? We want to hear from you. We already have people responding on social media from the parents' perspective, from the friends' perspective. Give us a call right now, 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. Okay, here's what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Roy Moore, the homophobic former Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, is once again running for U.S. Senate. Moore, who lost to Democrat Doug Jones in a special election in 2017 after he was accused of pedophilia, announced today that he will seek the Republican nomination to challenge Jones next year. Seems like he's not backing down. That's not stopping him. Moore has a long history of anti-LGBTQ and other ultra-conservative positions. He has said the gay rights movement will destroy the U.S., that sexual relations with a member of the same sex is equivalent to bestiality, and that gay people are unfit to be parents. He has called transgender people mentally ill and said they have no legal rights. Definitely someone that deserves a place in the office. The Human Rights Campaign reacted quickly to Moore's announcement, saying Roy Moore is one of the most anti-LGBTQ politicians in the country. He has been removed from almost every elected office he's held for misconduct and lost his previous bid for the Senate, despite Republicans previously holding both Alabama Senate seats for 20 years. It's unclear why he would want to be denied yet another public office or put Alabamians through another Roy Moore candidacy, but we look forward to helping Senator Doug Jones defeat him again. I mean, there needs to be like a law against just horrible people that if he's been like accused of all this stuff, like he shouldn't be able to run for office.
I mean, yeah, he has a lot more to worry about, his child molestation case
exactly.
And all that, instead of saying that same sex is equivalent to bestiality.
A lot of issues here. Now, it is World Refugee Day, and Kenya's government has ordered a group of 76 refugees to return to a camp they'd fled after some of them faced homophobic attacks. This is from a UN agency. They were escorted on Wednesday night, and these were photos that were shared by the BBC. The group had been living in a temporary accommodation in the capital of Nairobi. Gay sex is illegal in Kenya and the countries where the refugees come from. Last month, Kenya's high court upheld a law criminalizing gay sex. And in a statement, the UN Refugee Agency said the Kenyan government had decided to send the group, which includes LGBT people and children, to a camp in northwestern Kenya. So this goes back to why it's important to be there as countries where we are safe havens. We need to be there for refugees because refugees aren't just leaving just to go to a place, just to go there. They literally have no choice.
Right.
So on a day like World Refugee Day, it's important to take notice of these issues and see what we can do for those still experiencing hate and devastation in their countries and be, a support to refugees currently coming to this country.
I 100% agree. And I couldn't say it better myself.
Yeah, and by the way, Miri's List, we've had her on the show. Great organization, MIRY. Apostrophe S, List, is doing great work in LA and other areas, connecting to other organizations, literally helping them get acclimated and, basically build a home here in America.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's something we wanted to share today. Now, that was what's trending in the news, top of the hour, right here on Let's Go There. We're moving into our question of the day.
Cue of day.
Yep. Have your friends ghosted you after becoming parents? Oof, it happens to the best of us. You could have the best relationship with a friend, and yet when that baby comes, you are like,
what? Like priorities?
Yeah, I know. Although, as single, childless people, it's amazing to see the arguments we all have or excuses for, like, I don't get why they're not hanging out with me, or is like, who's selfish in this relationship? So again, our question of the day is, have your friends ghosted you after becoming parents? We want to hear from you. 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. And now on social media, we're hearing from both sides. We're hearing from the friends and also from the parents who say, reality check. You don't even get what's going on here.
Yes. Joe actually said, if we're going to social media, since we asked it, we are Channel Q, said, yes, a good friend married and he stopped being friends with anyone single as his wife felt best socialized with other married couples. Oh, that's interesting.
That happens. Yeah, I was told once by a friend, like, yeah, unless you're married, it's kind of, you're not like in the friend circle.
Someone yeah. said, Figment Forever said on Twitter, as a child-free couple, we started getting ghosted by nearly every friend possible. And when we asked why, the reasoning was, you don't have children. We have little in common now, and you wouldn't understand what life is like for us now. I don't expect you to accommodate us.
I mean, dang. I could see the truth.
That is harsh.
It is, but you know, that's the reality. So
is that the reality? Because that is terrible.
After the break, we're going to talk about two celebrity girlfriends who were very close until one of them recently had a baby and revealed this text exchange that proves that perhaps it is hard to continue being friends with someone if they don't have a kid and they're not on your level.
I think here's what you should do. Just don't have friends.
Yeah, just be a lone wolf. Again, our question of the day is, have your friends ghosted you after becoming parents? Give us a call right now, 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557.
Call Channel Q right now, 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. We are the new Channel Q.
So our question of the day is, have your friends ghosted you after becoming parents? We're about to go to some of your social media responses. As always, give us a call, 833-77-CALL-Q. Now, we are inspired to ask this question because it seems like Jennifer Lawrence and Amy Schumer, who were, you know, known as BFFs, things have changed since Amy Schumer recently had a baby. She's now a mom. And actually, this text exchange was posted that really shows what happens when you have a baby, and just like the friendship is different, including if your other friend is not at that time of their life right now. So in this text exchange, was it posted by Jennifer? She goes, "You up? I have questions about Handmaid's Tale." It's like, it's nice to know the celebrities are just like us. She goes, "Amy, what did she do on season one to deserve being in the gallows of season two? On season two, I can't." Anyway, she goes off. She goes, "I can't remember where I left off. Are you asleep because of the baby? Are you asleep before 11? Is this because of the baby?" This is Jennifer Lawrence texting. This is how she texts. "Don't make me resent the baby. Wow, you're really asleep before 11. I'll be damned." And then Amy goes, "Hi, I'm awake. She ran away." So, and then she goes, "Okay, so I can't watch Handmaidens anymore." This is what Schumer says. As she goes, adding, "filled with regret because of her newborn son that she has." So it was a great example of what happens between two friends when, once again, one person is moving on with their life, adulting, and the other person is still single, mingling, and watching a lot of Netflix or Hulu.
Well, I think it's interesting because I feel like I'm getting to that point where, in my age, I am getting to the point where my friends around me are having babies, and honestly, I don't care because I feel like I'm the one that ghosts them more. And it's very interesting because I'm so I'm a single child, and so I'm like okay with being by myself. So to be honest, I understand that our priorities are different.
That's true. And I've dated only children or, you know, people that were only children. And it's amazing because it's true. I do believe you're better at like being alone all the time. You're used to it. So you can entertain yourself. And actually, I had many friends. Most of my friends are actually married and have kids. And one of them specifically that lives in L.A., since she had a kid, now she has three. I mean, that's like
that's a lot.
You have like a startup. You have a business you're
running. That's kind of gross.
She literally she hasn't texted me back, Facebook. I'm trying everything. Instagram, she followed me on Instagram and checks my Instagram stories.
Okay, that means she's keeping up.
But she's not answering me. So I'm not sure if it's because she's a parent, she just doesn't want to talk to me.
So interesting. Let's go back to social media because we asked that we are Channel Q. And someone said, it's called they're busy being a parent to a whole ass human. And it isn't their job to keep in contact if they are, you know, busy.
And that is true. You know, like, I'm willing to go out of my way if my friend has a kid and I know that it is hard. I mean, I can barely, you know, handle my own life, and that's just with me right now. So I have compassion and empathy. I'm willing to go to your house to hang out with you. It's just hard if you're not messaging me back to make a plan.
But what if the times just change? Like, what if there's just y'all are on different life stages at this point?
Maybe. All right. Producer Vanessa has something to say.
I just really want to say I just have one friend that has a baby. It was my birthday. And then she's like, "Hi, do you want to come over to my house to celebrate your birthday?" And I was like, "Yo, it's my birthday. You come to me. I know you just had a kid, but that doesn't mean I have to do things for you. It's my birthday, so you do things for me." So pretty much I said she was being selfish because she was taking care of her kid. Well, but That's what happens when
y'all are selfish AF.
I don't care.
Well, the thing is like I will go out of my way, but like when it's your birthday, that if anything, that's a reason. Like just because you're a parent, and I hear this from a lot of my friends, we're not speaking on behalf.
She
of
could get a babysitter. Y'all can go to dinner somewhere.
It's actually really healthy to continue your life outside of your marriage and your kid once those things happen. Like
not if it's a newborn.
Well, yeah,
you got to be there. You have to be
so
there.
So, Vanessa, you are in the wrong for that. So, yes, there is a term right now called mom ghosting, the mysterious phenomenon whereby one gets pregnant or has a baby and some of their friends disappear into thin air. So it is happening. So
can I read this response on social real quick?
Go for it.
Okay, someone says, I'm not even a parent, and I still think more of a valid question is, have you asked your friends if they need help after they become parents? Parenting is hard. She said, parenting is hard, you guys. I'm not always available, and the only human I'm tending to is myself.
You know what? That's true. Why haven't not any of us just gone to our friends and tried to help?
About to offer my friends help to take care of their children. It took y'all two to tango, not me to tango.
You know what?
Are you kidding me?
I wish I could be one of those people like Aunt Shira, like as if I was the babysitter, but like I never was the babysitter. I was never asked to babysit kids.
I will say, as a single mother myself, it is really hard to get someone to babysit my dog, Coco.
I would babysit Coco.
I don't trust that.
So the reason why you might be ghosted by your friends or you might be ghosting, it's because of these reasons. Maybe you don't like children, or you don't say you don't like children, but your actions speak louder than your words, or your words, maybe you say things like, ugh, or not into that when they talk about their children. You don't want to be stuck in a house all day. You don't relate to their problems. You're grossed out. These are the reasons why maybe like you're turning your friends off from hanging out with you.
Well, do you think it is like, do you think the parents just didn't, it's not like they're intentionally trying to ghost you, but it's just that there is a lot going on, and maybe that you're just not at the top of the list, maybe as you was once before. And does that mean that you just go and find other friends that are in your type of world?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, expand your friendship circle. It does suck. It does feel like a huge loss when you have someone that you are very close with, and then they're building this family, and then you're just trying to... You're trying to do, even if it's meeting up once a year, it becomes like, okay, well, should I just let go of this?
Actually, I did just have that happen. A friend that I grew up with since I was like six, like we were best friends. And then she has a whole family now. Like she has a husband, she has a child. It was hard for me to even go to their wedding. It was hard for me to go to like, I've missed a lot of like, you know, I've missed the birth. Like it was like a lot of things. And for me, the one time I was able to go back, that's when I kind of got all the gifts for, you know, the son. But I knew it wasn't going to be possible that we were going to be in each other's lives. And especially her friends now are like moms. Are they like in relationships, and they're girls that are like going to that next stage. I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
I just recently went to my first wedding last year.
Oh, you're growing up.
So it's just like I'm just now getting to that kind of phase in my life. But then also, like I said, I'm completely comfortable with being by myself.
Yeah, I would love to maintain those friendships, and I do have a lot of my friends from back home. Everyone's in touch. This one friend, you know, there was a change or a shift or like a disconnect of our lives when I went with my boyfriend at the time to her birthday party. Well, everyone was couples. They were talking about their kids, this, that. And basically, my boyfriend at the time had drank a lot that day and was almost falling asleep at the bar. And I knew there was something then. One, I knew that it was a change that needed to happen in my life. And that probably we were all not going to be connecting with the rest of the room.
Yeah, probably.
All right. That was our question of the day right here on Let's Go There. You can continue to respond to us at We Are Channel Q, and we'll be going to your responses. We've got our Yaz Queen of the day coming up.
We sure do.
Yeah, someone who got an overall deal with Netflix, actually the first trans woman. So we are honoring her with our Yaz Queen of the day after this.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
It's time for our Yaz Queen of the day.
Yaz Queen.
Wow, that was a really intense one. I liked it. Came from like the gut.
It's actually the diaphragm, Shira, if you know anything about vocal work.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Now, this one goes out to Janet Mock, who is known for writing, producing, and directing FX's Pose. And also, she just signed a deal to direct an episode of Ryan Murphy's upcoming series, The Politician. Well, Janet Mock is going to be the first trans woman to sign an overall deal with Netflix. The announcement makes history because she's also basically the first trans person to establish an overall deal with a major studio. So that's amazing. And here's the announcement video.
Hi, I'm Janet Mock. I'm an author, the writer, producer, and director of Pose. I am announcing my overall deal with Netflix. This deal is so bonkers. I, of course, will be writing and directing and developing a few hush-hush projects that I can't really talk about. But one of them is a half-hour drama, and another is a college series. So I'm really excited for that. This is the first kind of deal of its kind for a trans person, no less a trans woman of color. You know, 84% of Americans say that they don't know and or work with a trans person. And so there's potential now with Netflix's worldwide audience to introduce millions, hundreds of millions of viewers to trans people and showing people who may not understand us that we can tell our own stories.
That was Janet Mock, who becomes, once again, the first trans woman to sign an overall deal with Netflix. That was her announcement. Now, according to Variety, the deal is a 3-year contract that gives Netflix the exclusive rights to TV projects from her, as well as a first look option on feature films. She's also going to serve as an executive producer and director on Ryan Murphy's upcoming show, Hollywood, in addition to her other projects. And the college series she mentioned will be about a young trans woman. But there will also be a show about New Orleans after slavery was abolished and a reboot of a classic sitcom.
Yeah, I'm very excited. She's like such an amazing just person and just activist in the work that she does on Pose and how she just carries herself. She's so like demure. I've always been a fan of hers, and her books are amazing. So if you haven't read her books, her memoir is just phenomenal. It really talks about her coming of age story and figuring out her identity and who she is. And I think it's just so beautiful, and I'm so happy that she's kind of leading this wave for trans people.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so Netflix gets a mini Yaz Queen, but Janet Mock gets the ultimate Yaz Queen of the day.
Yes, Queen.
If you want to nominate a Yaz Queen, send us someone that we should feature, then just hit us up on social media. We are Channel Q. Coming up, we've got Dr. Chris from Loveline here and more. So stay tuned for Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, we've got Loveline after our show. So definitely stay tuned for that and get your questions ready for Dr. Chris. He always has some great advice.
Yes, he does. Because we have the best voice for Loveline.
Oh, right. Yeah. We pretend we know all that, you know, advice and love and all that.
I wouldn't say we.
To me.
It's really one-sided, Dr. Shira.
Yeah, he's the real PhD. I just like to pretend I'm a doctor, if you know what I'm saying. All right, coming up on tomorrow's show.
Did anybody know what she was saying?
I said. All right, coming up on tomorrow's show, we're getting into a story about someone on Twitter who's getting dragged for wanting to cook and clean for her husband. And so, you know, in these modern times, is it really that bad to want an old-fashioned relationship? That's happening tomorrow. Plus, we're going to be diving into some more stories, including dating type. And what your dating type is, and how to maybe avoid certain dating types.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Because we all need help with that, don't we?
I mean, some more than others.
Are you hinting at something, Ryan?
Never.
All right, It's Thursday. That's coming up on tomorrow's show. Let's Go There from 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. As we wrap this up, we always say, we're sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
Have a great night. See you tomorrow.